fruit doesn't just nourish and feed us. It can also be a form of political resistance and social critique. And no one knows that better than Nigerian chef and writer Tunde Wey. He made headlines with the Food Stand Project, where he charged white people and others more money for their meals as a means of paying for their daily privilege. Now, in the midst of the pandemic and the country's renewed call for racial justice, he's pushing for us to rethink how we eat. And he joins me now from New Orleans. Welcome.
Thank you for having me.
So Tunde, you were in the midst of traveling the country to document stories that we don't often hear in mainstream news or on food shows. And then COVID-19 happened and you decided to change course, releasing this series of Instagram videos titled Let It Die. And when we say Let It Die, we're talking about the restaurant industry. This is a controversial take. Why isn't it worth saving?
So I think it's important to distinguish, say, the industry from the people in the industry. I'm not advocating for, you know, people to be unemployed or destitute. So I think that conflation between the people who make up the industry and the industry itself, which serves capital and ownership, is one that I am trying to break.
In the second installment of your video essay, you talk with a New Orleans restaurant worker and rapper, and you all filmed that the day George Floyd died. You call the video the Holy War, and you say for many black and brown restaurant workers, it's a war that they've been fighting for a long time. This kind of gets back to what you're talking about regarding the restaurant industry versus the individuals who work in the industry. Can you say more?
The vulnerability of the workforce of black and brown folks in the industry has always been there. You know, if anything, COVID has made it worse because black and brown folks, indigenous folks, are more vulnerable but less protected. We want to delineate between a worker and a person as if they are not the same thing. The reason why restaurants are open right now is because the government doesn't want to fund an economy where folks are paid to stay home and be safe. So folks have to work. That is not a condition that we should memorialize by using words like frontline workers. It's terrible. Plaudits and praise don't keep people safe. And so nothing has changed. And I say that, you know, we are at the cusp of nothing new.
I want to talk a little bit more about the work that you've been doing to really illuminate this message. But I want to ask you about something that you wrote. And you said that you've been repelled by American food culture, which you found to be simultaneously intellectual and abstract. And what you see is that there is no morality here, meaning no relevant message or message period, just food on a plate. Can you explain what you mean?
So that sounds kind of harsh, but I want to say, because I've been accused by some folks of not really indulging in pleasure or enjoying food. And I love food.
Interesting.
I in fact, overindulge often. But and the way that we sort of run away from the reality of being constantly on the clock is to think of food away from its most basic property. So it's not what does it taste like, but it's how did it all come together to be here on the plate? How were the greens arranged? What sort of technique was used? It seems as if the more abstract the food can be, the better we are, or the better it serves us. I know there's a place for expression, and I know that food can be this place where we express ourselves, you know, as a form of art. But I think you can see parallels between the economic system and how we focus on speculation to grow capital. You can see that in the way we consume food and what is important to us. It's not necessarily how it tastes. It's more about the theater around the thing.
Your food and food experiences have always been a means to open conversation about inequities. I mentioned your food stand project in New Orleans and your dinner series in Detroit, Hamtramck specifically. As a native Detroiter, I had to shout out to that. I was born right outside of Hamtramck. But you charged white people and others more money for their meals as a means of paying for their daily privilege. Why do you think food is a way to start having these kinds of conversations.
So I would say everything is a way to start having these conversations. I just happen to cook. You know, food is the place where so that people were receptive to my ideas. Also, food was a place where I found, at least in the mainstream, a dearth of these critical conversations and projects. So it's where I did it. I think that the probably most unassuming place for protests is the most effective place for it.
You also sold expensive hot chicken that ranged in price from $100 to the deed of a house for a full meal in North Nashville. I'm just wondering what were people's reactions to that? And in essence, really, who you're speaking to and hoping to reach with these food messages?
You know, I think in recounting some of my work, it sounds ridiculous. It sounds preposterous to sell hot chicken for a house. It sounds ridiculous to charge white people, you know, more for food. But like the audacity of my work reflects the scale of the problem. In North Nashville, the communities that I was working with were historically Black communities that were being pushed out by gentrification. You know, so the idea was, how do we secure affordable housing for Black folks who are maybe retired, who have a fixed income and who are being preyed on? So why don't we, you know, raise some money, buy their houses, put their houses in a community land trust and sell the homes back to them so they have the equity in their home, but they also have the security of affordable housing. And the way that I thought to do that was to sell hot chicken. So when I sold the hot chicken, I told folks what the problem was. Like, nobody was coming there to eat the chicken. They were coming there to like confront the reality of a city in Nashville that is rapidly gentrifying. And somebody bought a piece of chicken for like $100,000.
These instances are doing exactly what you're hoping that it would do. But how does this become a long-term, more sustainable type of model, or is it?
I mean, I don't think it is, because I was sort of like contemplating my work and I was thinking about what my success has been. And my biggest success, I guess, objectively, has been the amount of media coverage that the work has had. If you think about what we need, by we, I mean Black, brown folks, we need access to capital. The access doesn't exist. But what we do have access to is access to markets like the media market that allow for performance. So Black and brown folks, indigenous folks are consumed if they are performing, you know? And so my work is, in a sense, a performance that plays well in media spaces, because that is the only place where it is sustainable.
You mentioned your Nigerian descent, and for many years you lived here in the United States as an undocumented immigrant. How has your multiple identities and experiences here in the United States kind of shaped how you view food and its political nature in this country?
You know, we all live with fear. That's sort of, you know, a condition of life. But there's a certain sort of fundamental uncertainty that folks who are immigrants or folks who are never quite in their own place feel. It is not possible to live that way, to live with that sort of fear that breeds a certain kind of PTSD, that breeds a certain kind of anxiety, that breeds a dislocation. It is not possible to live with that fear and not have that taint how you see food, how you see the folks who make food, how you eat food. I know people, including myself, you know, we can go to a restaurant and when we sit down to eat, we're thinking and looking at the back. How many white people are here? How many Black and brown folks are here? How many of the Black and brown folks are in the back? You know, when you go out to a party, like, how many Black and brown folks are serving? You know, like that kind of thing. So when you sort of experience life a certain way, the whole thing can look like a plantation.
That's Tunde Wey, Nigerian chef and writer. Thank you so much for talking with us.
Thank you.